Frank Minifield is a former standout cornerback for the Cleveland Browns. He joins us on the Revel Wireless Hotline. And Frank, a lot we can cover with you, but let's start with this. You are a member of the board of the Blanton Collier Sportsmanship Group. And, of course, this is a very interesting tie because you're from Kentucky. You played for the Browns. Blanton Collier from Kentucky and, of course, coached the Browns, coached their last championship team. And there's an event coming up, the Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame, which you're a member of, and the Blanton Collier Award Ceremony is going to be held on Friday, June 28th in Louisville. And so the timing of all this is great because you're heavily involved in that. But I want to start with the point of your learning and knowing about Collier, because your arrival to the Browns as a player came obviously at a point. I mean, he passed away in 1983, and you started your career with the Browns as a player on this team in 1984, and you never really got to meet the man, but you certainly got to know his legacy.
Yes, I've had opportunity to learn a whole lot about Blanton. The first opportunity that I had actually came while I was playing for the Cleveland Browns. I was sitting on the airplane getting ready to go to an away site to play. And I think Kevin Burns came through and he was giving everybody a book. And I think the book was called The Little Giant, and it was about Blanton Collier. And so that was the first time I was really kind of introduced. I did read a whole lot of the book, didn't read it all. Reading some of the things that was interesting to me as far as, him being from Paris, Kentucky, him coaching the Kentucky Wildcats. I read a lot of those things that I recognized then. So after that, after I retired, I ran into the Blanton Collier family in Central Kentucky. And so the rest of it has been a little bit of history because ever since then we've been working towards this Blanton Collier Award.
Right, right. And that's something that – and let's talk about that ceremony as well, because the Pro Football – Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame is going to induct some new members as well. As I mentioned, you're already in there. And then awards are going to be given by the Blanton Collier organization. Give me a sense of, first of all, what's behind the Collier Awards that are going to be handed out?
Well, the Collier Award is a very, very prestigious award that is given out at the Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame. Past recipients are Jim Brown, Gale Sayers, Tony Dungy. Last year we gave the award to the entire Manning family. This year, we're giving it to the Harbaugh family. John, Jack, Jim, and Joni, and Jackie. All of them's names J's. All the Harbaughs are named J's. And the reason why we're giving it to them is because there was a very special thing that happened at one of our universities here in the state of Kentucky. About 20 years ago, Jack Harbaugh happened to be the head coach of Western Kentucky University, and Western Kentucky University was going through some tough financial problems at the time. And Jack basically was the whole program was placed on his shoulders as far as whether or not there was going to even be a program. The board of directors took a vote to disband playing Division I college football, and the vote was passed by one vote to keep it, but the one thing that was a consequence of that vote was they cut the money off. And so if the Harbaugh family is not at the university, if not at Western Kentucky University at that time, and John and Jim did not, if they hadn't come back to the state of Kentucky to help their dad, Jack, coach the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, we are 100% certain that there wouldn't be a Western Kentucky football program right now.
Wow.
And so the Harbaugh family, that's going to receive the Blatton Carey Award, because the Blatton Carey Award is for integrity on and off the field. And so we think that this family represents the best of all aspects of football, especially as it relates to integrity.
Frank Minifield, former Browns cornerback, joining us here on the Revel Wireless Hotline on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Yeah, this is fascinating stuff, Frank. And again, I know you pay close attention to all that's going on with this Browns team. You know that they drafted a cornerback named Leon McFadden in the third round, and they're really trying to fill that void opposite Joe Haden, and it's not an easy task to do. Your thoughts on just what you've seen of this team so far, and maybe what you know a little bit about maybe McFadden. And I know you watched Buster Skrine in the time that he was trying to fill in for Haden, and he's very much in the competition to try to win that job this summer at training camp.
Well, I have paid a whole lot of attention to the NFL over the last few years. Therefore, a while I kind of dropped it. But now my son is at in the Washington Redskins camp, was on their injury reserve team last year. And so I have paid a whole lot of attention to the cornerback position because he plays cornerback also for the Washington Redskins. And so, you know, the one thing that really comes to mind is just how tough it is to play cornerback in the NFL in 2013, 2014. That's what really comes to mind, because when I played, when me and Heifer played, we were allowed to do almost anything we wanted to do to keep the guy from catching the football.
Right.
To a certain extent. We couldn't bite him. we couldn't put him in a headlock. But everything else was legal. And now it's almost totally opposite. These guys are not allowed to put their hands on them for the most part, not allowed to even accidentally bump into them. And God forbid if your legs get tangled up and somebody falls to the ground, that's an automatic against the guys. So I really kind of have a real soft spot for the guys that's trying to play the position now, because I understand and I see it firsthand on a weekly basis every week. I mean, there's not a week to go by that I probably don't throw my head against the floor and say, I can't believe the referee made that call. And the two-hand touch that we have on the quarterback now makes it even more difficult, because you're not allowed to hit the quarterback, so the quarterback's going to stand there, and he's going to stand tall, and he's going to throw a good, pretty good pass. And, you know, during the years when we played, at least we had that little bit of fear in the quarterback's mind that he might get hit before he threw the football.
Right.
And so that took away some of the accuracy. But, I mean, you know, I think that the young man that they drafted has all the tools to be successful. God knows that you got to have two good cornerbacks and a quarterback to be successful in this league.
And the thing, when we think about that era, you and Hanford and that defense as a whole and the whole dog pound thing, I mean, there are folks that look at this team who get excited, as I think they should, at all the effort that's been made this offseason to make this defense a difference-making unit, right, with all the changes up front, going to the 3-4, bringing in Ray Horton, bringing in all the components via free agency in the draft to try to enhance this front. And there are those who will make that comparison to that era, Frank, when you and Hanford were back there, where it was sort of a defining part of what the Browns were, and then trying to reclaim that again. I mean, what was it like to kind of be part of that? Because it isn't just that the defense did well and made big plays. It was also that the team was winning. And like you said, it's got to be more than just one side of the ball. But can you envision that coming back to the Browns?
Well, I think it's a little bit unfair to compare the two teams, because, you know, we played in a total different environment, total different set of rules. The emphasis of the National Football League was more of a running attack. They really didn't intend to throw the ball too many times. They was going to throw it when they had to throw it, but basically the philosophy was to run the football. So that allowed me and Hanford, for the most part, to play one-on-one, and we could commit more people to the run because that's the way the game was played. The more people you could commit to stopping the run, and you could play the people man-to-man on the outside, then you had a chance to be successful because you was going to stop the one thing that everybody was relying on to win the football game offensively.
Right.
And so when you forced them to throw the ball, that was usually a little bit of a weak area for, you know, 75%, 80% of the teams that we played against. But, you know, there were some exceptions. I mean, you know, you had the Marx Brothers and the Amigos and all these different teams that was doing well throwing the football. But for the most part, 80% of the National Football League was a running team, and they was going to run the ball no matter what happened. And they had great running backs, and those running backs were people that you were going to have to put 9, 10, 11 people in the box to try to stop them. So, you know, what me and Heifer did during those years was, you know, it basically gave us an advantage because we were capable of playing man-to-man on the outside without any help from the safeties. But, you know, the rules also allowed us to do a lot of things these guys don't get to do.
Right,
so
right.
I think it's unfair to compare the two, but, you know, we really enjoy the love that we receive from all the people that follow the Cleveland Browns when they talk about our defense. Because, you know, the Cleveland Browns have had a whole lot of defenses over the years, and to always point back to the 80s when me and Hanford played and say that is an example of what great defensive football looks like. So we get a kick out of that.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you do, and it's great to this day to enjoy that, and I talk with Hanford about it a whole lot. You brought up this thing, too, about the difference in the rules and what corners are not allowed to do and how much you and Hanford and other corners of your era were allowed to do. So what do you say to a young corner these days? Your son, like you said, on that practice squad that he was with the Redskins and going to be in their camp, and maybe other young corners who seek advice from you, how can you tell them to play a game that is so much different than the one you play?
Well, Vic, I'm about ready to make everybody mad now.
Okay.
What I'm about ready to say is probably going to get everybody mad. You know, I think that there has been a deterioration in the people's ability to actually coach the cornerback position. I think that the great football players, the great cornerbacks from the 80s that actually played the position did not hang around to coach the next generation. For whatever reason, they are not present. And so consequently, I mean, you just go down the list of all the players that you consider a great defensive back in the 80s. Darrell Green, Hanford Dixon, Mark Haynes, Mike Haynes, Lester Hayes, Raymond Claiborne. You can go from top to bottom, and you will not find those guys present. And I think that if those guys had participated in the evolution of the 2012-2013 cornerback, I think you would see a better equipped technique to deal with what they're dealing with right now. But, you know, as it turned out, you have a whole lot of coaches that never played in the NFL, never played well at that position, that are teaching this generation. And so I'm sure that some of them are great teachers. But, you know, I always tell the story about an experience that I have every 4 years. Every 4 years, I like to sit on the couch and I like to watch the people dive in the Olympics. You know, that that board that looks like it's like 40 stories up.
Right.
I like to watch that event every 4 years. And you know, I sat there and I watched the first person dive, and that first person dive, and I say, that was a 10 in my math. And then the color commentary, the person that actually used to dive would say, well, that person over-rotated, hands wasn't together, the toes were flexed, and then they replay it, and all the things that person saw was true.
Right.
But, you know, me, I had never dived before. It looked perfect to me. And so that I think that that is a great example of somebody that has actually did it and what they see versus somebody that haven't done it and what they see. Because the person that have done it, they're gonna be anticipating certain things. They're gonna be able to recognize things quicker, and they also gonna know what the adjustment is right away. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of a disadvantage for the new defensive back because they did not get the benefit of learning from the people that did it great the decade before. So, you know, when I look at the technique that they try to implement, you know, I cringe on the inside. And I'm hoping, I mean, Chase Minifield, I've been teaching Chase Minifield how to play the position since he was in Little League.
Your son, yep.
And so, you know, I really, and you know, when they watch Chase play in Washington, you always hear how technically sound he is. Because, you know, he's been taught the right way to try to defend someone one-on-one. All these other defensive backs, I see them breaking all the rules. I mean, even from an off position, the off position hasn't changed at all. Okay? That hasn't changed at all. When you play somebody from 10 yards off and backpedal first,
right?
That technique hasn't changed. I mean, that's almost exactly the exact same way that they played in the 60s. We're almost doing it the exact same way. Sure. But you see a whole lot of defensive backs that don't really have that basic technique to do it from the off position. Hmm. You know, the NFL looks for a real athletic, tall, fast defensive back to try to run side-by-side by these tall, athletic wide receivers.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I see a whole lot of fundamentals just gone down the tubes, and I blame that on the guys that did not play the position, but now they've been forced to coach the position.
And as you mentioned, again, integrity and coaching, especially bring it back to the spot, which is why you are on the board of the Blanton Collier Sportsmanship Group, and you're going to be on hand for the Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame and Blanton Collier Awards Ceremony, which will be presented to the Harbaugh family. That is on Friday, June 28th in Louisville. And we thank you, Frank, so much for joining us today.
Hey, I appreciate you having me, Vic.
All right. He is Frank Minifield, former Browns cornerback, on the Rebel Wireless Hotline on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Much more is coming up on this Football Wednesday edition, ESPN 850 WKNR.